Welcome to Follow the Sound. I am your host, Brian Kroc. Each week we explore different aspects of music, be it concerts, albums, the artist's music history, or whatever the heck we want, because that's how we roll. Along with me is Jacob Crum.
How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing fan-frickin-tastic. Of course, our other fellow compatriot, Greg, is not in with us tonight, but that's, you know, beside the point. He's got stuff he's got to deal with, you know, mainly he's got to earn money, so he's got to work. But it's just the way it is. Everybody's got to do it. Everybody's got to work. Everybody's got to work to live and live to work.
Got
to
get behind the mule.
Got to get behind the mule. Earlier tonight, though, when we were recording one of our previous things, we decided that since it was the lead singer of The Darkness's birthday this week, that we were going to do the review for The Darkness's debut album, Permission to Land. Now, I got to tell you, this is one of the best examples of like glam rock that I've ever experienced in my life, and I'm not a huge glam rock fan. But The Darkness, of course, they were originally formed in 2000, and the band consists of Justin Hawkins, who it's his birthday this week, his brother Dan Hawkins on guitar and backing vocals, Frankie Palane, who's on bass and backing vocals, and Rufus Tiger Taylor on the drums. So it's kind of funny, though. They formed in 2000, and of course, they didn't even record an album until like 2003.
Yeah.
And the album that they recorded, of course, was Permission to Land. And like I said, it is in the glam rock vein. And if you saw these guys, you would also understand that it is in the glam rock vein.
What was it? Was it the deep cutaway V cut onesie that gave it away? Was it the sequins, the hair? Well, I don't.
The crazy music videos, the pure like power vocals of Justin. I mean, it's all around. This band was designed to entertain.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what they did.
The album cover, which is a radio starship.
Yeah.
I mean, I love anytime you turn a music instrument into a sci-fi film, I'm already in love with it.
Yeah. And so that's the thing that is kind of incredible, because I remember listening to this album in your truck back when you had a truck, and just like taking it in of the greatness of this band and of this album. And so I think that you know, it was just fortuitous for us to be able to come to the conclusion to actually do this album. Now, I am going to warn everyone out there, explicit lyrics are on this album, practically every song on the album. And so there is cussing there, and that's basically it. But I am giving you fair warning now, if you have young ones who are maybe like you're listening to this in a car or something, then do not let them listen, because this is going to have some bad language.
But if you can put your big boy pants on, go ahead and crank that stereo.
I'm just saying, like, you know, this
fair enough.
This has got some bigger of the cuss words.
The bigger,
You know, it's not like
because it rocks, Brian. Because
this is like hard R language and not PG-13.
Fair enough.
So I'm just saying. But we're going to get into Permission to Land by The Darkness. And of course, the first song on the album is a real cooker known as Black Shuck.
We'll be right back.
Oh, man. Like I said, that's a cooker. That is a great way to kick off an album, just with that raw power and Justin hitting those lovely falsetto notes. So you can obviously hear he is British. He has that British accent while he's singing. Not a lot of British singers actually have that accent, though.
Right.
So it was kind of interesting to actually hear that, you know, they sound like that. Now, of course, apparently they come from, what is it, Lowestoft, Suffolk, which I'm butchering English names because they never sound the way you think that they would sound.
Right.
And so, but yeah, like I have no idea where that actually is.
You got Suffolk right for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Lowestoft is not that far off because it's, I mean, unless there's some weird thing where they're like saying it's Lowestoft or something. But
I don't know. That sounds like it might be a Viking town.
That is possible. How about I do a little search here? Lowestoft, Suffolk. So, it looks like it's on the eastern side of the country. Yeah, it's in the southwest. Yeah. It's kind of chilling over there.
It's south of Norfolk.
But it's on the beach. So there you go. It's got lovely beaches.
Mm-hmm. And a church.
There you go.
A church that is supposedly haunted by a big black dog.
Interesting.
Which is what the lyrics are about. And you know what that dog does, Brian?
What?
It doesn't give a fuck!
All right, so let's move on to number two.
One small note, though, however.
Go ahead,
this,
do your one small note.
This song right here is the only song on the album that does not have a Gibson Les Paul in it.
Ooh.
That guitar right there was actually a Gretsch played through a Marshall, according
to this Gretsch. See, now I love
Gretsch. Wikipedia. Yes.
So Gretsch is one of my favorites.
And their guitarist, Dan Hawkins, he sold that guitar later to fund the second Stone Gods album.
Oh, nice.
So there you go. Even when you're a professional musician that tours the damn world, you still sell instruments for your pet projects.
Yep. I would too. So let's move on to number two, which of course is Get Your Hands Off My Woman. Yeah. Now, of course, like I said, explicit lyrics. So we've had F bombs and now an MF thrown out.
I
in
think
the lyrics.
We've moved past the warnings. I think it's
so. Yes, I'm just saying, like, we were serious when we said explicit lyrics. Mm-hmm. So I actually have always liked this one just because it's like, you know, the angry, like, get your hands off my woman.
You know, I love this song because I once heard someone go on a diatribe about it being sexist, and that the chorus suggested that women were objects that could be possessed. And the line in the hook right before the chorus is, I've got no right to her frame. She's not my possession, you cunt.
Yes. So there you
go. Thanks for not listening to the whole damn song before
Nobody
you were
retired. Nobody ever listens to this stuff anyway. It's just,
well, you know.
It is what
good
it is.
Song, man. I just rock hard.
Absolutely. So let's. For me, though, like I wanted to point out.
Yeah.
Like I love the drums on, like, especially the first two ones. But, you know, because they're these good hard rocking songs. But if you listen to it, you can hear that they were inspired by not only like 80s glam rock, but the drummer is clearly doing stuff that is similar to like AC/DC drum riffs.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just layered though with all of this other really great sounding guitars and great riffs on the guitar. So yeah, I love listening to the drums in the background, and because everybody listens to the vocals, it's like and everybody knows, like, oh, he's hitting these high falsetto parts. But when you're listening to this, try and listen to some of the other layers that they're putting in there with bass and guitar. It's just phenomenal stuff. But let's get to my favorite song on the album, at least as of right now, because it may change if one, by going through it again. But this is the one I remember, and I remember listening to it like over and over again, and it's like just it grew on me very quickly, and that song is Growing on Me. God, you guys couldn't see this, but we were totally singing this song while, you know, we were allowing you to listen to it. That is how much we get into that song. Mm-hmm. That is a brilliant song, man.
It is. Everything.
Everything about it, from the drums to the guitar parts to everything that he's singing, the harmony part in the background that follows him along his melody. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, even just the simple lines that he does, you know, I'm being punished for all my offenses. I want to touch you, but I'm afraid of the consequences. Yeah, yeah. It's like just little things like that that I love. Like, to me, that is like a perfect song for this album. And it's my favorite so far.
You know, I love the bass line in this because there's a very subtle, very simple thing that's going on here. The guitar part is a really standard hard rock lots of downstrokes, using upstrokes for accents, but they're being matched with hammers instead of pick strokes.
Mm-hmm.
All those accents are being matched on the bass, and they're going in the opposite direction. They're going less aggressive than the accents, which it really, that's just a whole nother thing there.
Whole other thing. So let's get on to another thing. I believe in a thing called love. Yes. Now, I do got to go to one particular part there, though, and I'm gonna have to pause it for a quick second and then show you, because that's not my favorite part of the song. My favorite part of the song is a bit later on when they go back into the pre-chorus again. So let me play that for you right now. It goes a little something like this.
Touching you, touching me.
That's it. I love that part for just a couple of reasons. One, he hits those super high notes,
yes,
which are amazing. Two, it's right after this killer guitar part, guitar solo, that is just crazy awesome. And then three, for the O's in the background. Those,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh! It's like that part just floors me every time. Because that's one of those little things that you stick in a song,
mm-hmm,
that, you know, not everybody really picks up on.
Yeah.
But if you listen to the song and you hear that in there, it's just a little tiny thing that they threw in there to make it sound extra awesome.
You know, there are very few notes in music that just other singers can't hit or just don't hit the same way.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Minnie Riperton with Lovin' You.
Mm-hmm.
That's note at the end of the La La La's.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee Ernie Ford in 16 Tons.
Yeah.
That super low baritone, right up there.
Yes.
Hawkins, I Believe in a Thing Called Love.
Yep. Absolutely. Totally agree. So let's move on to the next song, though, which is called Love is Only a Feeling.
So, Brian,
yes,
is Growing On You still your favorite album, track off this album?
I'm going to say yes,
oh,
but this one is easily number two.
Yeah,
just because it's like their ballad, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or it's like one of them, at least. I mean, I've heard some other ballads that they've done, but yeah, that one, like, it starts off just so cool, and there's like all these layers of stringed instruments and stuff, and then kicking into just a lovely, lovely chorus. Man. I'm glad we picked this album.
I don't know if anyone... We have nothing insightful to say on this album.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's like it just speaks for itself,
yeah, it really
basically.
Does.
I mean, like, we can talk about the instrumentation. We can talk about the lyrics or whatever, the vocalist, or, you know, or some other random history of the band. But fact of the matter is that most people probably haven't actually listened to the entire album, mm-hmm, and so they don't know about a lot of these songs. So that's why I'm happy to you know, go through this stuff and actually give people a chance to listen. So speaking of listening, though, we're going to move on to Given Up.
Oh,
I don't know if that's the best song about doing heroin.
Explicit lyrics.
But damn it, I enjoy it. All right, Brian. This song is never going to be in a Carnival Cruise Line commercial.
No, of course not.
I think this is better than Lust for Life.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, I like the Stooges, for sure. I like the Stooges. Yeah. Stooges all day. But damn.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's just one of those, like, melody-wise, it's such a clever song. And then just to finish it off, like, just the end of, yeah. It's kind of, like you said, it's kind of hard to actually talk about the music because it's just like, God, it's so good. But, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's just, we gotta keep going. It's going to be a short review. We're not even going to hit the hour mark at all. I know.
Oh, well.
Because we're just going to, like, fly through all of these.
Yeah.
So, and we don't have, you know, the other person here to also then comment on this. But I think that, we're still gonna get through this because we've only got what 4 more songs left in the entire album, and we're only 20 minutes in. Like, so is what it is. So let's just go ahead and move on to the next one. Why not? And it is called Stuck in a Rut.
Oh, kiss my ass, kiss my ass goodbye. Well, by character limit.
So, yeah, Stuck in a Rut. Doesn't sound like it to me.
Something about those guitar parts makes me think that if CCR had stuck around for another decade, that's what, or if you just play John Fogerty's, like if Van Halen played John Fogerty's music, that's what it would sound like.
Yeah. Man, I got to say, though, I think that, I totally want to see The Darkness in concert.
Yeah.
Like, I never really got a chance to. Like, they don't come through this area very often. But if they come through, like, in the next couple of years, I'm totally going. Like, it's just that simple.
One other thing to note.
Yeah, go ahead.
The lyrics as written in the jacket is not, let me go make sure I get this right now. It's not kiss my ass. It's written as kiss my arse.
Oh.
And yet, British Gentleman here is singing ass.
Interesting.
And I know that that's a point of contention with many of our Saxon brothers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he can say whatever he wants. It's his song. So I just, everything about this album, though, is, like I said, they are designed to entertain.
Yes.
Even their slow song wasn't slow. It was, you know, just a slightly slower tempo than what they were doing before. So it cracks me up that this band isn't beyond this album. I don't think they had any other major hits, right?
No.
At least in America. Yeah, they did. In the UK, but not in America. And so that's why it's kind of crazy to think about this, because they could have easily had like just an insane career after this,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they broke up a few years later and then they got back together in like 2011.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'd love to see them if they ever came to town.
If they did come to town, who, and you, okay, if you were putting the tour together, who would you bill with them?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I think you have to get Steel Panther.
I would say Steel Panther is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like if I was just going to put together a sort of a great sort of metal-ish
yeah.
show, I'd probably have to do like The Darkness as the headliners. So I'd have to say that their opener would probably, I'd want them to be something like Dragon Force.
Ah, yeah.
Like they're metal, but they're like super speed metal. Mm-hmm. And so it'd be like this contrast of like superb vocals and like just raw rock power. And then like, but Dragon Force though is all like speed and accuracy and kind of finesse actually, like mm-hmm. more so than yeah, just yeah, raw yeah. power. And so I'd like to see the contrast between those two. Just as far as bands go. But Steel Panther would probably be like my other than choice.
Yeah, yeah.
So like three bands in the night, I'd put it Steel Panther, Dragon Force, and then our great friends The Darkness. But that's just me. So let's go ahead and move on to the next song, which is called Friday Night. Once again, like another ballady song, except not a ballad because it was kind of fast. It's like, yeah. You know what I loved, though? In the background of that song, you can hear that piano,
yeah,
which
yeah, yeah.
is totally like a 50s kind of like thing, you know, just hammering away on those chords. Like those little tiny things just make the music a little bit more special. I love it. Like, because they could have easily not had it in there, but then they decided to put it in there. Why not?
Yeah, those keyboards actually remind me a lot of the keyboardist from Spinal Tap was played by David Koff, who is in this really weird, like, prog rock band called Rare Bird.
Oh, yeah.
And they did a lot of that, like, throwback keyboardist stuff laid on top of other keyboards and then put into weird 11th beats. And I don't know. There you go. Food for thought. Rare Bird, look them up. Sympathy, outstanding track.
Nice. I'm gonna have to check that one out actually. So I know that we're getting closer to the end here. Oh, mm-hmm. that's right. Sorry, I did come up with one thing that I thought was kind of funny. Is that little piano part in the background? For some reason, it triggered another song with me. A song called "The Way" by Fastball.
Mm-hmm.
Like back in the early 90s, like where were they going without ever knowing? It's like, and it's got that great piano part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For some reason, that clicked in my head, like when they were doing that. I don't know why. It's just it sounded kind of similar to it. I'm not saying that one thing influenced the other, but it, things like that happen in my head a lot, where one thing completely triggers another thing, and I just got to go down the tangent. So, but let's get moving on here to the next song on the album, which is called Love on the Rocks with No Ice.
Mm-hmm.
That was Love on the Rocks with No Ice.
There's a slow tempo number.
Yeah, that was definitely a lot slower and a lot heavier than the other stuff on the album. Like, that was a lot darker. You know, I guess that's why they could kind of be described in like a hard rock form.
Yeah.
But definitely not in the glam rock form. But yeah, that was a much harder tone, you know, a much more distortion driven guitar riff. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of the offshoot of the album, actually, I'd say.
Could you say that it was cranked up to 11?
Sure, why not?
Their later albums are a lot more like that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's kind of...
I could see how they kind of moved in that direction, mm-hmm. but for me, like, this album, though, will always be the thing that defines them.
Fair enough.
But speaking of that, all albums must come to an end at some point, and for us, the last song is to be played now. And that is track number 10, Holding On My Own. And I hope you like it. I do like that one a lot. I like it when they get a little bit more soulful in their delivery. But I think that's a great song to kind of close out the album on, just because it's very heartfelt. And it's kind of, Justin can't help but sing in an operatic format.
Yeah.
Just because that's the way he sings. And he sings all these high notes and stuff. Yeah, but he sings in a very controlled way, too. And so it's kind of easy for him to do a dramatic thing. And I think that that's what that song really did, was it had these dramatic moments in there. These really, musical elements to it that are beyond just like a rock song, that more in line with like a musical or something.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the reasons why I like that. I still, Growing On Me is still like my favorite song on the album. But that one I'd probably place like third or fourth, though, for holding my own.
I got to go Black Shuck.
So you just really like that one.
Oh, everything about that song is amazing.
And, yeah.
You know, last week we came at you with something that was kind of out there and was really soulful and deep, heartfelt with storytelling lyrics. And
yeah,
today, complete pop. Just
yes.
Pop that's 30 years out of when it would have been popular.
Of which I do have to, I got a sidetrack here just 1 second. So, you know, of course we did Tom Waits Mule Variations last week. And I just got to say thanks to all of the fans out there of Tom Waits who were showing me love in the Facebook groups. You guys were cool. You guys were very supportive, and you were actually telling me, you're like, oh, wait till you listen to this album. Oh, you should listen to this. Oh, it's like Tom Waits is amazing. It's like, I'm so glad somebody else found it. Like, you guys were super, super cool, and I thank you for that. And then, you know, now back to the review that we were doing. The Darkness fans, if you are listening, show us some love and prove that you're better than those other people who are also cool. No, but the Darkness, you know, of course, they had this huge, massive hit with Permission to Land. It had, what, like 4 or 5 singles on it that all, like, just shot through the charts. Big in America, big around the world, huge in Japan, as in also reference to Mule Variations.
Yeah.
They were big in Japan. And then, you know, they toured extensively, like, throughout all of this stuff, just, like, for 2 solid years, just knocking out venues, like selling out crowds and whatnot. Toured with Metallica on their tour. And then they came back with their second album, One Way Ticket to Hell and Back, and it kind of bombed. It opened at 11 on the charts. It dropped to 34 the next week. They played like 12 shows in the UK and like only sold out a couple of them, you know, which was kind of a big deal. I mean, it's like all of the singles on it did okay. Now, the funny thing is that it ended up selling platinum status.
Yeah.
But the other album sold multi-platinum status. And so that's kind of like the weird thing is that we talked about the sophomore slump of some groups in one of the in our music history show. But this is exactly that. Like, they kind of went from this super awesome album and then kind of went to like a sophomore slump with their second album, or maybe it was purely just marketing on, you know, the label's fault, or I mean, there's all sorts of variables that go into why an album doesn't perform as much as or as better or as well as another album. But for me, The Darkness, Permission to Land is up there as just one of the best rock albums to come out, especially this late. Glam rock was big in the 80s, and then it died in 91. I mean, like, it died the second grunge went on air on MTV with Smells Like Teen Spirit. It's like, that's when glam rock died.
Yeah, and this thing went multi-platinum in 2003.
Yeah.
I mean, when albums still weren't selling.
Yeah.
How big would this...
And glam rock albums certainly weren't selling.
No. I mean, how big do you think this would have been if it dropped, you know, the year after Guns N' Roses tour, or the year after Guns N' Roses quit touring and broke up? If The Darkness showed up, how big would this have been?
I mean, that would have been pretty intense, you know, but I gotta say, though, Jake, if you want on here, we can play the bonus track.
Oh, I think we should.
The bonus track is called Making Out, and I have never actually heard this one before.
Neither have I.
So I'm looking forward to finding out what this is. I just realized it because I looked at the tracks, and then I was like, oh, look at that. So I don't know how come I've got this one track on here, because I was looking through this, like, the Japanese deluxe edition has Making Out, but it doesn't have, like, I don't have The Best of Me on this, on my listing. Mm-hmm. And so, but here we go. Bonus track for the first time ever. Jake and I are going to listen to this. This is Making Out. So, Jake.
Yes.
What was that?
I know exactly what that was.
What was that?
That was the answer to a question I've had in my head since we started this review.
Which was?
Which was, you said, like, well, the band got together in 2000 and the album came out in 2003. This lets me know what they sounded like at their very first show when they were doing covers of AC/DC. And it's outstanding.
Like, oh man. Like that was actually really killer. And I really want to listen to the rest of the song. Unfortunately, we have fair use rules to follow along here for the copyright issues. But
that doesn't stop you right now from running out and buying this album with the bonus tracks and listening to all of it.
Yeah, you can get that. Actually, there's a couple of different versions of the album. There's the standard, you know, edition that they came out with, which has only 10 tracks. They've got a European Christmas edition version,
yes,
which has a Christmas song on there called Christmas Time,
which was a single,
or Don't Let the Bells End. Then there's the Japanese deluxe edition, which has The Best of Me and Making Out. And then they've got the Japanese deluxe edition bonus DVD, which has 3 additional tracks that are all like live performances. Ah. So, but they're all, you know, it's the History of the Darkness, and then Get Your Hands Off My Woman, and I Believe in a Thing Called Love. So there you go. We got ourselves a nice little bonus track there out of it. I dig it.
You know, even the number of tracks is a throwback to old LPs.
Yeah.
10 tracks.
10 tracks.
Don't need any more than that.
You know,
who needs an hour and 5 minute long album? I mean,
double albums.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Always cracked me up. But yeah, I like the fact that they edited themselves and they were like, nope, let's cut this down and like put this into, you know, a 10 song thing. So that's great. So honestly, I mean, Jake, let's do our reviews here.
Yes.
Okay. What's your ranking? 1 to 10.
1 to 10. Man, this is a 9. I don't care that it's just pop. It's just, this is the best hard rock album. This is the best metal album of that decade. Period.
Yeah.
Period.
I mean, I could argue, like one of my all time favorite metal groups, which is Carnivool from Australia.
Yeah.
But at the same time, nobody in America knows who they are. So, like,
I'm putting this up against Corporate Kalani, Turisas, all the, like, weird Swedish bands that you don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know a bunch of Finnish bands, though.
Well, yeah.
I don't know a lot of the Swedish bands, but I know a lot of the Finnish ones. But yeah, for me, though, like, I'll definitely put this easy top 5 rock albums of the decade.
Yeah.
You know. And like by top 5, I mean, I'm putting it at like 1 or 2, maybe 2.
Okay. Okay.
So,
okay.
But that's for me. So I'm going to give this one a 9 as well.
Oh my God. Okay.
Because
then.
It is such an entertaining album.
Yes.
Even if you don't care for, you know, glam rock necessarily, or you, for some stupid reason, have a problem with Justin's voice, I honestly, like, this is one of those albums that it doesn't matter. You could put it on random.
Yeah.
Or, like, yes. I could put my entire music collection on random, and then all of a sudden it comes up with one of these songs. I'm not skipping it. I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to rock out to it, and then I'll move on to whatever else is next. So that's why I'm giving it a 9. It's because this is one of those albums, because I even have memories of this. I have memories of listening to it. This is an album for me that is listened to in a car.
Yeah.
Because you got to be like moving and, you know, feeling the power of the car with you. So I remember listening to it in your truck. I remember listening to it in the convertible on my honeymoon as we were driving up Highway 1 in California, because we're going up like through all these winding corners, and it's just like, it's on random on our iPod, and it's like all of a sudden it pops up, you know, like Growing on Me or Black Shuck or something like that. And Jessica's like, you know, oh, I'm just gonna, just like, you better not skip that. It's like, it's gonna be a song to rock to. So that was always like one of my favorite things, like just listening to this in a car while driving and just rocking out and screaming at the top of my lungs, even though I can't hit those notes on the high end at all. I am a tenor, man. I cannot hit those soprano parts that he does. Just crazy. But Either way, I hope you guys have enjoyed Permission to Land by The Darkness. It is obviously a really great rock album, and I know Jake and I have really enjoyed presenting it to you, especially if you've never listened to it for the first time. So I know sometimes we like to do reaction stuff on this on these episodes, but you know, this one was just one that we both loved, and we're like, yes, let's do this.
We couldn't stop talking about it, so
we decided to do it. But I am Brian Kroc, along with me is Jacob Crum. And, you know, I gotta say, this has been a blast. But remember, if you hear it, especially if it rocks your face off,
follow that fucking sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.